goal tonight is speak about the Eifod. After tonight, Be'ez Hashem, next week we'll be able to talk about the Choshen and the Urim V'Tumim, etc. And then we really will have covered the vast majority of the Bigdei Kehuna, in particular those that are unique to the Kohen Gadol and those that the Pesukim discuss at greater length. The plan tonight is again to speak about the Eifod. That's one of the first that the Chumash really describes at length. What we're going to try tonight is as follows. We're going to try, like we always do, give a little bit of a Hakadama. Then we're going to talk about the form, the structure, how exactly it is constructed. And after that, we're going to really, tonight at least, use some machloksim about how it's constructed, try to develop a very important idea in the world of Lamdas about the Eifod. I'll be honest when I say that I had a very, very hard time finding anyone that said anything Lamdas-wise about the Eifod. And Baruch Hashem, Lubavitch Rebbe was able to come along, some would say more actively, some would say more passively, and provide us with wonderful insight to be able to understand as well as possible. And it's awesome and beautiful what he did. Let's start like this. The Eifod itself, just to give a little bit of a Hakdama, we find in Chumash, look in the first Makar, just initially the order shifts a little bit as far as the list of the Bidei Kehuna. When the Torah initially in the beginning parts of Tzav and lists the Bidei Kehuna, so Eifod is mentioned after the Choshen. The Choshen is the breastplate. The Eifod is the garment that you wore primarily on some level. It was some sort of a garment with shoulder straps, and you attached the breastplate, the Choshen, to the Eifod. We'll elaborate in a little bit what the Eifod exactly was. But here, the Choshen is mentioned before the Eifod. Yet, when the Chumash goes on there in Perakot Ches Pasuk Vav, we go through the details of how you construct it. We first go through the Eifod, V'yasu, Esa Eifod. We first go through the building of the Eifod itself. And that's something which some of the Mefarshim point out already. And I think it gets us thinking, we'll elaborate on this maybe a little bit more next week, the relationship between the Choshen and the Eifod, already thinking a little bit, to what extent are they really integrated? Are they really one? There are those that think that's Mechal to be shown, and where the Choshen and the Eifod are really sort of like one. Once there's eight begadim, are they sort of like one integrated idea? The Eifod holds the Choshen, are they really somewhat separate? The fact that we use them interchangeably, or that we switch the order, may be very important. The Kli Yakar in sources 3 and 4 has two different suggestions as to why the order shifts. None of that is as critical for now. The formulation itself, as far as Eifod also, just to point out by way of Hakdama, is a little bit interesting. Most of the Bidei Kehuna, when we're commanded to build the Bidei Kehuna, it says Va'asisa. Dafka, in regards to the Eifod, and you have a similar phenomenon with the Arum, it says V'asu. Just the phrase, the Tzivoy, is mentioned differently in regards to the Eifod. And the question is why? The Kli Yakar offers the following suggestion, and this is just one which I think is interesting. We know the Gemara in Zvachim tells us that all of the Bidei Kehuna are mechaper on something, the same way that the Karbanos are mechaper on something. What are Bidei Kehuna mechaper for? So what is the Eifod mechaper for? So the Gemara says they are mechaper for Avodas V'chavim, for Avodas Zara. Suggests the Kli Yakar V'asu is more in Lashon Rabim. That's how Chazal understand the context of the Aron. And that Dafka in the Eifod, it was important that all of Klal Yisrael on some level were involved in the Eifod, because the Eifod is mechaper for Avodah Zarah. And all of Klal Yisrael, at least according to the way that Rashi understands it, all of Klal Yisrael violated at Chet HaEgel. The Mishkan comes in some way to try to rectify that situation. So because we had all messed up, not Moshe, that's why it's more of a distant, but the rest of much of Klal Yisrael had messed up with the Chet HaEgel, that's why there had to be a certain kind of tikkun that would come dafka through the Eifod. And that's why the formulation of the Eifod is going to be a little bit unique. It is there to try to rectify a little bit the chet of Avodah Zarah, and it's a chet that, again, Klal Yisrael had some struggles with. There's a lot of assumptions there about chet ha'egel, none of which we're going to talk about right now. That's all just there as far as a bit of a hakdama. Let's talk a little bit about the Eifod, and let's talk about really the construction of the Eifod. There's some things that we know from Chumash about the Eifod, and there are a lot of things that we don't know in Chumash about the Eifod. Let's talk about the construction as follows. Number one, the Eifod is made out of, the Pasuk tells us, Zahav Tcheles Argaman Tola Ashani Vishesh Mashzar Maase Choshev. It is somehow weaved with a combination of different materials. Different materials. It has Zahav, then it has Tcheles Argaman Tola Ashani, different colors, all going to be mixed together. The Eifod is going to have, again, a combination of a lot of different colors. That's number one. Number two, the Eifod happens to be Shatnez. The Eifod has Kilayim in it. That's part of the discussion we referenced a couple weeks ago when I incorrectly said that the Machlokes and the Rambam and the Raavad, that some of the B'tei Kahuna have Kilayim in it. We assume that that's okay. Dafka B'shas Avoda, or Shlo B'shas Avoda, that's a bit of a Shaila. But that's it does consist of Kilayim. The Ephod itself has three sections, or at least what we will define as three sections of the Ephod. One is the actual body of the Ephod, the main part of the Ephod. I'll elaborate on what that is in a second. There's also with the Ephod a belt that comes around the Ephod. There's a belt that comes around it. That's the Vecheshev Afudaso. There in Pasuk Ches is the belt around the Ephod. It would be tied in front of the belt. There was also in the Ephod shoulder straps. That are those Ksefos HaEphod. That's in Pasuk Zion there. There were two shoulder straps. So the Ephod had a belt. We're not going to elaborate on the belt that much. The Ephod had a body. There was a certain body of the Ephod, the main part of the Ephod. And then it had shoulder straps. Let me try to go through the main body as well as the shoulder straps, try to define some of the details about it. Again, some of this stuff is a little bit tricky. This is hard stuff. Let's point out as follows. So what exactly does the body look like? If you look in Chumash, I think you have a very hard time pinning down exactly what it is. Rashi writes, this is a little bit of a famous Ha'ara of Rashi, in the beginning of the discussion of the Ephod, Lo shamati v'lo matzasi b'braisa perish tavniso. Raz, I did not hear from my Rebbeim the form of the Ephod. And Rashi says, it happens to also be, I am not aware of Amari Chazal that actually described that much about the Ephod. That's something which a lot of Mepharshim, when they introduce a discussion about the Ephod, pointed out that we don't know that much about the actual construction of the Ephod, despite the fact that when you're learning the Psukim, there are a lot of Psukim about the Ephod. The actual, what exactly it looked like, is somewhat unclear. So Rashi says, V'libi Omerli. So Rashi's pshat is in the category of Libi Omerli. And that is interesting in and of itself, what the meaning of this Libi Omerli is. The Rav, this is quoted in the Rav Chumash there, quotes from a couple different places. The Rav understood that this is part of an idea, a larger idea, which you find in a variety of Achronim, and others suggest within this Rashi, that a lot of definition of the Ephod is not going to come from individual or very clear sources. A lot of it comes from a certain kind of halachic intuition. A lot of it comes from a certain kind of understanding that that sometimes you can't pinpoint it always in sources, but it's a certain deep understanding of Torah that Rashi had. And because of that, Rashi could say, though I'm not aware of a Braisa, and though I can't say things in refers to Psukim, Libi Omerli, I'm telling you based on all that I've learned in other areas of Torah, that I really think this is how the Ephod is supposed to look. The Labat Rebbe, one of his Sichos, is going to give a little bit of a different shot. We actually suggest what Rashi was thinking of when he said Libi Omerli, what were some of the background that influenced him to give the particular shot that he gave. But that's the Hakdama. We don't have a lot of understanding of what exactly it looks like. What does it look like according to Rashi? So Rashi and the Rambam both more or less suggest as follows. More or less. We'll elaborate on some of the differences in a little bit. Because the Mishnah points out that there are slight differences between the Rambam and Perek Tes of Klei Hamikdash and Rashi. But they both more or less define the Ephod in the following way. Please listen up. The Ephod primarily was like a skirt, the main part here. It would cover the bottom half of your body, but really the back of the bottom half of your body. The front would be open. It would be like a skirt covering the back half of your body. If you look in, source number 11, the picture on the right is really Rashi and the Rambam. Again, it looks like a bit of a skirt that's open in the front, and it has the belt, the cheshev ha'ephod, that's sticking out of it. That's how it looks according to Rashi. It is the bottom part of it. Rashi, that's the first part. The shoulder straps, if you look at them, according to Rashi, they're sort of like suspenders with a back without a front. They just start, strings that start in the back, they go all the way up, and they carry on into the, all the way over your shoulder. If you see there also in source number 11. So it's like a skirt with a back, doesn't have a front, has a belt that you would tie to keep it tight so it would stay on. It would have like individual, from the waist up, there'd be two like suspenders, two almost like, not strings isn't the right word, two segments of the beged that would go separately, one up on the right side, one up on the left side, and it would go right over your shoulders. That's how it would look according to Rashi. According to Rashi also, Here's one machlokas between Rashi and possibly the Rambam. Rashi and the Rambam agree as to the bottom skirt, the material it's going to be made out of. It's going to be made out of all of those materials we mentioned before, of the tcheles and the argaman, the tulas shani and the zahav, etc. Rashi writes the shoulder straps also are going to be made out of those same materials, just like the actual body itself of the ephod. The Malbim points out that the Rambam never writes that, and the Malbim points out the Minchas Chinuch does not learn this way. But according to Minchas Chinuch, everyone agrees shoulder straps have to be the same as the body itself. The Malbim points out that according to the Rambam, though it had the same similar form, the shoulder straps did not actually have to be made out of the same materials as the actual body. But that's more or less the Shita of Rashi and the Shita of the Rambam. 1, 2, and 3. I believe before spending the last couple of days pretty much the Sugya of Ephod, I never had any good understanding of that at all. But I think that's what it looks like. The Rashbam argues with Rashi, and it's not surprising there's going to be some machlokas. We really have a bunch of deyas. The Chizkuni has another deya, Rif Kasher, in Torah Shlema. If you look in the Miluim to Parsh Tetzaveh, published at the end of Parsh Pekudei, he has a couple other shitas. Encyclopedia Talmudic, they quote three shitas, there are other shitas, but the Rashbam, we'll just go with the second shita. The Rashbam views it a little bit differently than Rashi, and there are two main differences between Rashi and the Rashbam. Whereas for Rashi, it's a skirt in the lower half of your body, but it only really covers your backside, but the front is open. The Rashbam says, no, it actually covers your front side also. The Rashbam says it covers the back and the front, and there's a small hole in the front side, but it really does loop around much, much more, all the way really covering the front also, according to the Rashbam. The second distinction, according to the Rashbam, is that the shoulder straps. According to Rashi, from my waist up, it's really two separate independent straps that come over. According to the Rashbam, that's not what happens. It's not separate straps. It's actually like a solid connected piece that goes on your back all the way up. And then once you get to your shoulders, then from there emerge two separate straps that happen to go one over each shoulder. Look again in source number 11, the picture will become clearer. It's a skirt that goes in the back and also in the front with a small hole there. And the back, it's not two separate straps coming out of the waist, it's one piece that goes all the way up on your back. And then once that piece ends, there are two separate straps that end up going over your shoulder. That's the machlokas Rashi and the Rambam on the one side, as opposed to the Rashbam. 1, 2, and... Yeah, I can get some, okay. The shoulder straps themselves, so I already referenced one machlokas. We have one machlokas about where they straps all the way from the waist, Rashi, Rashbam. If the other machlokas, maybe it's going to the Malbim, between Rashi and the Rambam, was made out of the same material. In the middle of the shoulder straps were something called the Avnei Shoham. The Avnei Shoham, the beginning of Parshas Truma, we already find reference to the Avnei Shoham. What are the Avnei Shoham? This is going to be important, because there are some things that we get and some things that are a little trickier. So if we split the Ephod and the Chosh, and things will be a little bit simpler. The Avnei Shoham, if you look at source number 19, there are six different shitos as far as how exactly it looks, but they are, each one of the shoulder straps has one stone. There's one stone on each of the shoulder straps. Each one has a list of six of the Shvatim, so six on one hand, six on the left. That's going to end up equaling all of them. Each one, according to Chazal, so leaving it to Chazal, have 25 letters. 25 letters, meaning all six Shvatim on one side are there in 25 letters, also on the other side. Because there are machloks, and again, six sheets here you can look at as far as which go on the right side and which go on the left side. It seems to be three days, the Gemara Masechta Sota, the Rishonim have machloks, exactly how it works out. Rashi and the Rashbam and Truma, the Gaonim there, you have different deos as far as exactly how it works. Because you have different deos, but everyone agrees it's going to be six on each side, and everyone agrees that it's going to have 25 letters, you're going to have some machloksim how you spell certain names. Is Binyamin going to be spelled Chaser or Male? Is there going to be a Yud at the end of Binyamin or not? Is Yosef going to be spelled Yosef, or is Yosef going to get a Hay in there? Is Yosef going to have a Hay in there? If you look, for example, at if you look at the Rambam Shita, the second on the left column, the second one down, it's Yehosef. There's a Yud Hey Vav Samech Pei. It's all about getting 25 letters on each side. Those are all discussions, and we show them not for now. But the Avnei Shoham would be singular stones that would be found inside the Ephod. What we did so far tonight, thus far, a bit of an introduction, a little bit. Choshen, Eifo, the relationship between them, they seem to fit together. The Choshen is going to be standing, it's going to be connected to the Eifo. The Eifo, this sort of garment you would wear. We spoke a lot about the construction so far, Rashi and the Rambam, more or less. The skirt in the back, open in the front, with straps coming up. We spoke about the Rashbam. It's a skirt that goes all the way around. And on the shoulder straps are going to be the Avnei Shoham, with machlok, in terms of how exactly we list the Shvatim. If you want to just point it out, it's one just ha'ara about it. For most we've shown him, the list is going top down. Your right side is going to be either Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Dan, Naphtali, that's what Rashi has, or maybe you'll put Yehuda on top because he's Lo Yasser Machlos Mi. Yehuda's the Melech, and then you'll have Dan from there. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Dan, Naphtali. What makes the Rambam Shita unique is that it really goes right to left. Look at the Rambam, it's Reuven, and the left is Shimon. Then next line is Levi, the next line is Yehuda. So you have some machlokes, and exactly how you figure it out. Are you going in order of birth? Are you going in order of family? Are you going in order as far as the sugya Masechta Sota, Har Grizim, and Har Eval? Lots of different shitas. None of that is really going to be our issue thus far. But so far, how are we? 1, 2, and 3. Okay. Lavitch Rebbe does something which is, I don't know how to say it, it's amazing. It's unbelievable, and I had a hard time finding people speaking about the Eifo that much. Again, I'm talking about it in Chazal, so it's like people aren't talking about it that much. Like, there isn't a sugya, per se. What he does is amazing, and I want to try to... He points out as follows, and it's really very beautiful. The whole piece is... So the Sicha, it's in Krach Lamed Vav. Chafav, sorry, could you see Chos? That, I believe, is in Yiddish. There is in Likras Shabbos, Chabad puts out every Shabbos, like a collection of Sichos. Some of them translate. So one of the Likras Shabbos, the Parshat Tzaveh, they have the Sicha more or less in Hebrew, and I therefore went with the Hebrew version because I don't know any Yiddish. Although tomorrow in Rav Hunder's letters, the word Andrish will be there, but that's a word that I think many people may be familiar with. If not, then Neil's going to have a hard time. So, who knows what the word Andrish means as far as like the thumb up and down? Okay, I think it's you and me, kid, as they say. What? We'll see. It means Hashem. No. So let's go as follows. The Baba Vitrevi points out as follows. There is a Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah comments in Paratesa Peros Klei HaMikdash. When I said before that according to Rashi and the Rambam, they have more or less the same Shita. Kesef Mishnah says, yeah, they're more or less the same Shita. With Kama Shinuyim, there are certain small differences. The Minchas Chinuch also points out the similar kind of a line. There are certain like small differences between Rashi and the Rambam, and leaves it at that. Baba Trebi points out, I'm sorry, it's on the sheet. I have it on my phone actually right now, open. The Baba Trebi points out as follows. Oh, not open my phone. That there are differences between Rashi and the Rambam, and he thinks those differences between Rashi and the Rambam, what look like small differences, are really part of a much larger and fundamental disagreement about the Eifod, and by extension, all of the Big Day Kahuna. Not bad. Rebbe points out as follows. Let's start with one distinction. Rashi, I'll jump on one of them, and then we'll maybe go from there. Rashi points out that the Eifod, so it's there in your back, it covers your backside. According to the Rambam, all it does is cover your backside. Rashi goes out of his way to point out that it covers your backside, but it also holds over a little bit over the front side also. Okay. It's the backside and folds over a little bit. That's one. Two, another machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam. How far down does the eifod go on your body? The Rambam makes it sound like it covers your legs, covers your raglayim a little bit. Okay. Rashi is clear it goes much further down. It goes all the way to your ankles. It's all the way to your ankles. But none of that seems to be particularly fundamental. Argues the Baba Chirebi, let's understand what Rashi and Rambam really are arguing about and where it comes from. And he suggests as follows. He is choker the following shaila, and it is a good one. Sorry if it takes a little bit longer than usual. I'm telling you, it's totally worth it. The Rebbe's choker the following shaila. The Big Day Kahuna, the Torah teaches, hath me lechavo vilasif ares. They're made in a nice way, in a kavodik way, in a certain way that adds a certain kind of splendor. The Rebbe's choker the following question. to what extent are the Bidei Kuhuna primarily begadim? They're primarily the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen's clothing. This is only found in the Kohen Gadol, the ephod. Primarily the clothing of the Kohen Gadol of the Kohenim. Just, there is a halacha that the clothing of the Kohen Gadol has to be made, l'chavo v'lesifares, has to be made to look nice, but fundamentally it's clothing, fundamentally it's a lavush. Or, no. This is not really clothing. The Bidei Kuhuna, at its core, it's not clothing. Bidei Kuhuna is more of a tachshit. It is more analogous or equivalent to jewelry. It's all about lechavod v'lesif ares. It's much more a form of a fancy jewelry kind of a thing. It happens to be that jewelry takes the place of something that looks much more similar to begadim. It looks much more similar to clothing, but at its core, it's more jewelry. That's a question that the Rebbe raises. It's one that, as you look at some mefarshim, you become sensitive to it when you look at some mefarshim as to how they formulate certain things. Are these things tachshitim? Are they levush? Are they begadim? That's that. Lavat Rebbe suggests that according to Rashi, is fundamentally a beged. It's fundamentally begadim, and he argues that is why. And he has two additional things he explains based on it. But that's why for Rashi, it's fundamentally a beged. And fundamentally a beged, as a beged, it should have a certain degree of tznius. Because it's a beged, says the Rebbe, it makes no sense to have a beged that only covers the backside. It has to fold over a little bit at the front. Part of the beged is that it does cover. And because it's a beged, analogous to what you find in Chazal Meseches Yuma, that there's no stairs going up to the Mizbeach, that says the Rebbe also, that's why it goes all the way down to the ankles. It's supposed to cover more of the body and fill more of that role of a beged. A beged, which he argues, for whatever reason, is one that's there much more for tznius purposes. But at its core, they're really begadim. The Rebbe suggests that basically, I can explain to you three things. Number one, you remember that original list, the Mefarshim asked the question, how come the tzitz is left off the list of the original Bidei Kuhuna? There are six there, why isn't the tzitz there? Rashi is silent. Rashi, says the Rebbe, feels no need to explain why tzitz is missing. Why would that be? We spoke in the past in Shir, about how the Rebbe read Rashi very, very closely, but a lot of things off of Rashi. Why does Rashi not feel the need to explain why tzitz is missing? Says the Rebbe, because for Rashi it is pashut. It's the same words as Bnei B'chai. For me, it's so pashut. Because all the Bidei Kuhuna at their core are begadim. That's what we're listing. The tzitz is not a beged. The tzitz is a tachshit. The tzitz is not clothing. It's a fancy thing that he would wear. It's a crown he wears on the top of his head. And therefore, Rashi did not feel the need even to explain why tzitz is missing, because it's obvious why tzitz is missing. All of the Bidei Kuhuna are really clothing that are begadim. Anything which is not a beged, a tachshit, obviously will be left off the list. How are we so far? 1, 2, and 3. The Rebbe goes on to explain two other things. One, he goes on to explain, that's why when Rashi quotes it, he says something interesting. He says, well, what does this look like? He says, it is kimosinar shekorin parjaint bila'az. It's like this beged, it's like an ephod, this thing that they called in French that, shechogros hasaros kisherochvos al hasusim. Rashi says the ephod looks like the clothing that the female saros, the female noble women, I guess, used to wear when they would ride horses. That's a very strange thing for Rashi to bring in here. Some of the Hasidim Taina, it's in the Sefer Siach Safek Kodesh, we quoted this years ago in a Parsha talk, some of the Hasidim say, what's pshat? How could Rashi ever even, you have to buy into this, everybody knows it's fine, but how could Rashi have seen a woman riding a horse? How is that possible? So he says, Elamai, what happens, Hasidim say, Rashi sitting in the base of Medrash. And it was Abbas Medrash, and one day, oh my gosh, he saw a woman sitting there wearing this thing on a horse, and Rashi saying to himself, why would the Rebbe Shalom do that to me? And Rashi said, now I get pshat, because that must be what the ephod looks like. Why else would the Hazrach HaPratis have me looking at it that way? But says the Rebbe, it's not pshat. He doesn't reject that pshat, but he does not work with that pshat. The Rebbe says, al pilum, what Rashi is trying to do by bringing that in is to define for me part of the essence of an ephod. The ephod is like the clothing that women wear when they are on the sus. Meaning, why are women wearing that? It's extra tznius to have extra long clothing on. He's trying to say, it's like a min of beged. It's like a levush. It's like clothing. That's why it's like the clothing. Meaning he's giving you an example. Who says clothing looks this way to have something like this? Answer, no, it's like the clothing the women wear for extra tznius when they're there. And because it's clothing makes it tzitzis, that's why it goes all the way down to the ankles. That's why it is for Rashi said that's how it looks like. Says Vav Terebi, it's also pshat in Rashi's Libi Omerli. What's pshat in Rashi's Libi Omerli? Rashi's saying as follows. You're right. I really don't have mefurash mekoros that all this is there. But Libi Omerli, I know the Bidik Huna are really begadim. That's how I learn all of the Bidik Huna. And because it's really begadim, he points out Rashi goes through the psukim. There are psukim here. And Rashi shows how I learned the psukim and how I can darsh the psukim to say a lot of how it looks. Says the Rebbe, Rashi saying is Libi Omerli, there are certain details missing. And Libi Omerli, because I understand it's a beged, that's going to impact that even though I have no mikoros, even though there's no brisa, certain dina, I'm going to say it goes down all the way down to the ankles. And I'm going to say it folds over a little bit. Because when I put it all together, says the Baba Trebi, I know it's a lavush. Because that's all the bidikun at its core. Maybe not the tzitz, and we'll speak next week about the choshen, but at its core, the Bigdei Huna, Stam Bigdei Beged Kuna, is a beged. It's fundamentally clothing. And Libi Omerli, therefore, it must be that it goes over here a little bit, and that it goes a little bit lower. Akan the Rebbe's Pshat, for this Rashi, 1, 2, and 3. The Rebbe then goes on to say as follows, that as opposed to the Rambam Shita, the Rambam doesn't hold any of those things. For the Rambam thinks that Bigdei Kuna are fundamentally tachshit. They're fundamentally clothing with something which is there in order to look nice. And therefore he feels no need for it to go lower. Therefore he feels no need for it to go around at all. It's much more of a tachshit. It's much more of something which is stam there to be nice. He connects to a couple other machloks in between Rashi and the Rambam. I would add one ha'ara. If I'm a Rashbam Jew, look over, that's very much beged based. For the Rashbam, it's not just it goes a little bit over, it actually goes all the way around. And it's even the shoulder straps, not just plain straps coming out, has much more of a back. From a Rashbam Jew, I'm looking like Rashbam, the Chorah is much even more considered to be like a Beged. But that's what the Rebbe explains is really Pshat of Rashi. It's a lot of reading into Rashi. Let me explain just one Ha'ara, if you want to just work off of, to clarify something that the Rebbe's Pshat. In general, in learning, it's more of a methodological point, but one that I think is helpful. In general, in learning, you have to distinguish between what you would say a priori, meaning, what would I say lichathila, and given all of the material, how am I going to explain it? There's a chance that one could have said, no, but if it's lavush, maybe it should look this way, or even if it's that, it could have been like that. What the Rebbe is doing is he's trying to look at all the evidence of Rashi, and trying to understand how must Rashi have explained it. He's looking at a couple things that are strange for Rashi. Libi Omerli is a very, very, very rare formulation. That the adding it on, which is nowhere in the psukim, those differences between Rashi and the Rambam, where's that coming from? It looks like Mefarshim pointed out, the Rambam's written off of Tash of the psukim. Where are those additions coming from Rashi? Why is Rashi so uncharacteristically comparing it to the Levush, the Nusha, that the Saros would have when they're Rofos, like Abi Behema? And he's putting it all together with a couple other machloks that one may be able to speak about next week, about the Choshen and the Ephod, to piece together, to give us some insight to what the Ephod is all about. And in doing so, he gives us, I think, some very nice insight into a understanding of the of Bidei Kuna as a whole. I think it's a very important question, one that will go there. It happens to be, the Baba Trebi, they put it on the foot of the Baba Trebi, pointed out, some of this is already meduyik in the Maharal and Gur Aryeh. The Maharal, it's an awesome Maharal in Parshas Truma. The Maharal, if you go in the beginning of Parshas Truma, is it okay I'm going a little bit? We commit that it's a nice Sichel Torah, but I think it's a nice. He was a legit, giant. If you look in the beginning of Parshas Truma, so you find something interesting. We're in the beginning of Parshas Truma, and the Torah is telling us the things that we're going to need for the Mishkan. And we're told as follows. Okay, Tzelas Argument Lashani, I get all of that. And the Torah goes on to say as follows. Avnei Shoham v'avnei Miluim la'efod v'lachoshen. There are stones that are there. Avnei Shoham and Avnei Miluim. For the Ephod and the Choshen. There are stones of the Shvatim on both the Ephod and the Choshen. The Ephod has one stone on each side with six Shvatim on it. The Choshen, the breastplate, many of us know, that has the Avnei Miluim, that's what they're called, Avnei Miluim. And they go, it's 12 different stones, 12 separate distinct stones on the breastplate. The Baba Trebi points out, the Maharal points out, but he references this. It's interesting. Why do the stones have different names? Aren't the stones pretty much doing the same thing? Why are the stones on the Ephod called Avnei Shoham? The stones on the Choshen called Avnei Miluim? Look over, they're all doing similar things. What does it mean even as Avni Miluim? So Rashi and the Ramban have a machlokas there. What does it mean to be Avnei Miluim? What exactly is the difference between them? What's the significance of it? That's a machlokas between Rashi and the Ramban. The Maharal suggests as follows, and this is an interesting insight. He suggests this within Rashi, I think. He says the difference between Avnei Miluim and Avnei Shoam, although they are both stones, they accomplish different things, and therefore they have different names. He says the Choshen, that we'll think about next week, that is primarily a tachshit. That's primarily jewelry. And the purpose of the stones there, it's all about the stones. They are Avnei Miluim Mimale, they complete and they fill the whole purpose of the Choshen. They're much more critical to it. That's Milashon Miluim, to be Mimale, to fill up. They become much more, because it's all about jewelry, so the stones are the dominant part of it. Those are Avnei Miluim. But says the Maharal, the Ephod is not fundamentally a Tachshit. The Ephod is fundamentally a Levush. And because fundamentally clothing, it's not Avnei Miluim. Those Avanim are not making it into something. They're not Mimale. They're not filling it up and making something new. Those are just Avnei Shoham. Those are just things that are going to be on top. They're going to contribute to it. But it's not going to have the same name of the Avnei Miluim as a result. So suggests the Maharal. Parentheses, the only weakness is that Rashi in Parshas Truma calls both the Ephod and the Choshen a Tachshit. But the way the Maharal understands it, Eino Domeh, and that's, again, a little bit of a side point, that even though Rashi there calls it a Tachshit, it's an element of a Tachshit, but its core fundamentally it's still a Levush. He tries to explain a bunch of things based on that. Akan Shkayak, guys, having wonderful night.
Why are they
canceling
the
Gunna? Why are they? So that's a longer piece of that we talked about.